Welcome to Five Red Lights. My name is Jesse Finver, and with me is the incomparable Howard Goldberg. And if you couldn't tell from the name, this is a podcast that's all about Formula One and the racing world, but mostly just Formula One.
You're probably thinking, why a Formula One podcast? Why not? One of the most exciting and fastest growing sports in the world right now. It's right at the intersection of racing, innovative technology, political games and mind games, and the unexpected.
And it's the unexpected, the politics, the intrigue that honestly like really got us into Formula One in the first place. And I think that's how we should start this podcast. I think
There's such a misconception that it's cars riding around in odd shaped tracks, not really passing each other much, but it's so much deeper than that. I first got into the sport through one of the most eclectic personalities I think the sport's ever seen, Daniel Ricciardo. I became a listener of the Smartless podcast during COVID, and one of the guests that they had, this was in August of 2021, was Daniel Ricciardo. And they talked about Drive to Survive on Netflix and how it was boosting the popularity of the sport and how it seemed like it was a big positive change. And just his personality, he just was funny. He was engaging. He just was interesting. It made me want to watch Drive to Survive. So I did, and probably watched, I think at that point, there were either two or three seasons out. Watched probably in a week the whole thing, probably less if I'm being honest. I was just addicted right away. And I think the first two races I actually watched were Saudi Arabia and Abu Dhabi in 2021, which were the race that Lewis pulled level with Max on points, and then obviously the famous title decider in Abu Dhabi. And I mean, it was just the best time to get into this sport. It created crazy expectations, not going to lie, but not every season's going to be like that, but it was amazing.
Yeah. And I got into it right after that. It was the season after that title chase between Max and Lewis. And I watched, it was Drive Survive also. And it was a combination of you and a couple of my other friends that just, they were just like, listen, like this sport is awesome. My interpretation of racing was always, not interpretation, but my introduction to racing was just like NASCAR. They drive in a left, like they go left over and over and over again. And that was just never my thing. I like racing. I ran track. Like I appreciate the spirit of racing competition better than most. And it was just a great drama filled TV show that really got me into the sport. And I realized there's just so much personality and so much uniqueness with each track and with each team, and so much goes into it. So I fell in love with Formula One the similar way as you, but now it's just, you know, it's taken off significantly in the United States, and now I feel like I'm part of the club.
And you know what, I kind of just came to this realization. You know what kind of like pop culture, like almost phenomenon, it became a really big movie, came out like a year or two before like the explosion of Formula One in America.
What was it?
Ford versus Ferrari.
Yeah.
Came out on 2019. And that went on to be a huge movie that kind of opened or introduced a lot of people into what racing is kind of really about. So yeah, that just as we were sitting here talking, I kind of had that realization.
Dudes love fast cars and they love American cars as well, and in the United States, and Ford, a story about Ford and Ferrari, and people, and Americans love Ferrari too. I mean, they just do. It showed
the lengths greatness that competitors are willing to go to beat each other.
Yeah.
And like the sacrifices they had to make, and it's not just driving a car. And I think kind of showed a lot of people that.
Absolutely. So yeah, that's how we got into F1, and we were just talking recently. This kind of came together quickly, and we were like, let's do a podcast about this. We love talking about it as it is. And there's nobody I know that's more knowledgeable about racing and Formula One than Howie. And I don't know a lot of racing people. And I do the whole podcast thing. It just felt like this was a great opportunity. So we wanted to just, you know, share our love of the sport and have an outlet for it.
Speaking of love, should we talk about our favorite teams and drivers?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to get for the listeners to get to know us. And I'll start. I am a McLaren guy. I know that they're the best team right now, but I have been supporting them for a while. And Lando is my favorite driver right now. And it's interesting because I started as a Max fan because I was watching Drive to Survive, and all I knew from the show was just Mercedes winning. So I was like, all right, like he is the best shot to take down Mercedes. Like I want Max to win. And I still like Max. But I've gotten sick of all of his winning. And I picked the team that, other than Haas, because they were the American team, I would root for them a little bit. But McLaren was just like, all right, you know, like they have a chance to actually be good at some point. They're McLaren. And thankfully they turned it around, and last season was a lot of fun. And Lando is my guy right now. What about you?
So
I think it's not too hard to, tell.
I'm a Ferrari fan. I think Sebastian Vettel said it best. Everybody's a Ferrari fan, even if they don't think they are. Like it's just racing DNA is Ferrari. And so it just, the red car draws your eye. It's the passion of the Tifosi is just like unmatched. I sent you that video of them in Milan sending off Charles and Lewis for Australia, so singing the national anthem. It's just like,
what's a Tifosi, just for the casuals?
Tifosi is the Ferrari fans, Italian Ferrari fans. It's their nickname. But this video, it was the way like I Americanized it for you was, imagine like the Mets are about to go start their season in like DC playing the Nationals, right? And right. Could you imagine like 75 to 100,000 Mets fans showing up in Times Square to sing God Bless America or the national anthem, and then like just go home, like send them off, hear them answer maybe a couple questions and then leave? No.
Yeah, no,
that's not something that we do here. But like it's their national team. And so I think that drew me to Ferrari. It's just like unmatched. Charles Leclerc, watching Drive to Survive, his story grabbed me. The way like it was always a dream with his father and his godfather, Jules Bianchi, who died on track because of a collision on track. And the way he just like stormed right through the junior categories, got signed by Ferrari as a rookie, it was unbelievable. But as you know, this year there's kind of a new darling for me, because I've been waiting for this one for a couple years now. Kimi Antonelli is, the next generation. Yeah, I think he's the Max, the Lewis, the Fernando. I think he is the cream of the crop for the next 10 to 15 years. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, and he's so young too. So you got
been on this kid since ground like floor. 2022.
Yeah. So he's your guy. And your Ferrari guy. Lando's my guy. Way, I like Oscar, Italian. Oscar too.
By the way, Kimi's Italian. I feel like at one point it's going to happen. He's going to be a Ferrari driver.
Yeah. I mean, Lewis will drive for a couple more years, and then they'll have to fill another.
Well, they have Ollie Bearman in their driver academy. So he would theoretically be the next in line after Lewis, you would think, unless everything goes horribly at Haas.
Well, we'll see. I mean, you can probably, you know, put that in dark, dark pencil. That because you can still erase it, but Haas is, yeah, we'll get into that. You know what? That's a perfect segue to get into our predictions for the season. You've learned a little bit about us. Now let's talk about the sport itself. We've got predictions for the season. Now I know we're recording on Monday after the Australian Grand Prix, and we're going to talk plenty about that race. But I think that And we wrote our predictions down ahead of qualifying for Australia. And we have our predictions for the Australian race itself and then for the whole season. So we'll talk. We're going to start with the Constructors' Championship and talk about, you know, our top 10, or in my case, 11. And I'll start it off with Haas at 11 and then 50 miles of shit. And then the next team after that, because Haas, I think, is just going to be by far the worst team on the grid this season.
Yeah, I'm with you on Haas at number 10. I think that the rest of the grid just moved forward more. That's all it is, really. I don't think they regressed. Just don't think they moved forward as much. They're focusing on next year, I think. Number 9, I've got Sauber.
Okay.
I think they're also punting, kind of. They're just waiting, just watching the clock until Audi arrives, you know?
Yeah. I think that I completely agree. I think it's a clear bottom three for me. I have Sauber also, and then I have Alpine. I just don't think that they have the car. They haven't had it for a while. And it's less about them. It's more about the other teams ahead of them that just clearly have better cars. It's Haas.
And at this point, if you're down Sauber, at the bottom LB. End, it's not worth investing in your car
with the regulations changing at this point.
So, yeah. 8, Alpine. 7, I have Aston.
Okay.
And I think that they're actually one of the teams that could be anywhere from 7 to 5. I think if we get the Lance Stroll all season that showed up in Australia, I think they're going to be 5. But if we have what we've seen the past couple years from both him and Fernando and the team, I think they're going to be 7.
I have him also at 7. I couldn't agree more. Again, it's less about them. It's more about the cars in front of them. But they're clearly one of those middle-of-the-pack teams.
And it'll be interesting to see
when they get taken over. Next year, it's going to be very different for everybody. I'm interested to see how that goes, but this season, 7 feels right. And I could see them being 6. I'm very confident in my number 5. We haven't gotten there yet. I think it's 6 or 7 for Aston Martin.
You know what I'm curious about with Aston Martin as well? How much do they have Adrian Newey look to improve this year's car as opposed to just looking forward at 2026 working with Honda for that car?
Do you think that because you're interested. Yeah, I understand.
What would you do? Going to come out of it. They're not going to get podiums. If they put everything into this car at the end of the year, they might be able to fight for podiums when everybody else is looking towards next year. But is that what you want? Because then you set yourself back for 2 or 3 years in the next regulations, because everybody just has that much of a head start. So I think they exploit that relationship he already has with Honda from working with them at Red Bull and just get a head start on 2026. All right, number 6. I've got VCARB. I think that they've done a nice job of kind of rebuilding their car. I think Yuki is very fast. I think Isaac Hadjar is going to make some mistakes, as we saw this weekend, but I think at the core, he's a very fast driver. And we'll learn. I mean, he finished 2nd in F2 last year. He knows how to get results. So I think we'll see them finish solid midfield team.
Racing Bulls is 6 for me as well. And a lot of it had to do with how sick that car looks. I'm not kidding. It's the nicest looking car on the grid.
It's very reminiscent of the special edition Red Bull ran in Japan a few years ago. They ran a white special edition.
Yeah, it just looks sleek. I mean, I'm kind of messing around here, but like honestly, though, I mean, like they're part of a really great team, and like Red Bull is just, you know, had so much success, and they looked great in practice in Australia. I watched that, and I was like, all right, they got some pace ahead of these predictions, and I don't know, it's just. I love Yuki. I think that he's a really talented driver. We'll talk about him more later in the pod, but Yeah, I think Racing Bulls, that sixth, seventh, that feels right for them. I have them at six. I got to make a prediction.
5, 6, 7 is going to be so close. And yeah. Alpine even has a chance to fight in that group, but I'm not convinced, though.
Yeah, neither am I. I mean, I like Gasly and then whatnot, but yeah. So number five, I talked about them before. I didn't say their name, but I really think Williams is like the best of the rest. I just love their drivers, and adding Sainz is just such a great addition. Albon's a really talented driver, as we saw in Australia, which we'll talk more about later, but very impressed with Williams, and I think they're going to be fifth this year.
Yeah, I have Williams as well. I'm a big believer in James Vowles. I think he's learned processes, and he is very driven in knowing what he wants, and he doesn't settle. And I think we saw that in Drive to Survive and how he went after Carlos Sainz so relentlessly. I think they have a plan, and I think they're well on their way to achieving it. And yeah, I believe that they're going to be surprising people all year to the point where it's not going to be surprising anymore.
Yeah. I'm rooting hard for them. For as long as I've been an F1 fan, Williams has been bad. And I know historically they've been great. It's just been a while. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they improve this year and continue to, you know, go up and above and beyond.
Yeah. Drivers make a huge difference. You see it at Red Bull with how an exceptional driver like Max can get the most out of the car, where somebody like Checo or Liam Lawson is going to struggle. So yep,
100%. All right. So number four,
the segue for me, because at number four, I have Red Bull.
Yeah.
And it's for that exact reason that I just said. I think that we had heard Checo complain about that car for almost a year and a half, almost halfway through the 2023 season, when Max was still dominating, winning everything. Didn't Max have like 2 8-win streaks in that season alone?
Yeah.
Like something it like was,
that. He was dominant. Was
crazy. And here we had Checo complaining that the car was undrivable, but Max just kept winning, and he kept winning for another year on top of that. So I think we've taken for granted how much Max can get out of a car that's not optimal. And I think with a rookie, nothing against his driving talent, because it is huge. He's been successful everywhere he's gone. Liam Lawson, Super Formula in Japan, the junior categories in Europe, he's always been successful, but I think this is a whole other animal now. So yeah, Red Bull 4.
I have Mercedes 4. And it's mainly, I just, in terms of the driver talent, Kimi Antonelli impressed me a lot. And after watching the races, I'm like, maybe I have Mercedes too low. So this was ahead of everything. I had Mercedes at 4. I'm not feeling great about it already after 1 week. but mainly,
why is that? Is it because they're tied for the championship lead?
A little bit. It's just, I was really impressed with how good Kimi was. I didn't realize, I wasn't familiar with his game, as you were. And he's a rookie. I had to believe it to see it. So, I had Red Bull higher than Mercedes just because of the past couple of years, the history, and how dominant they've been. And they have the best driver on the grid. They just do. So I look at that, and I'm like, I need to have Red Bull higher than Mercedes. And that's why I have Mercedes 4. And I have them, behind Ferrari and McLaren as well. Just in terms of driver skill, I just think that they were the lowest ahead of this. They might be a little bit higher than I was giving them credit for.
Yeah. All right. Number three, I've got Mercedes. I think you hit on some of the things. I think they're just stronger. Kimi Antonelli, I've been a believer for a long time. I mean, there's that pass in Bahrain last year that he passed Oliver Bearman in turn 4. That is just like, you don't see somebody come from, honestly, he was behind him at the apex and stuck it in around the outside. And George Russell, quite frankly, makes mistakes, but sometimes puts out eye-popping pace that you're just like, where'd that come from? He's done it the past couple seasons against Lewis. So I think that, yeah, Mercedes third, constant podium threat. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I have changed my tune in Mercedes. You may have a believer in me. But three, I have Ferrari. And you're not going to like to hear this, but I know you know it. Management is the issue. It just is. You saw it in Australia. And you've seen it the last couple of years. A constant throughout the last couple of seasons is just Charles yelling at the people in the paddock for different issues. And it's not Charles's fault. He's just frustrated because the car has the pace. It's just there's been strategy mishaps. There's been mechanical issues. And it's got to be super frustrating. And already, like it feels like micromanagement is something that they do as well, which we'll get into when we talk about the race itself. But, yeah, so
yeah.
It's strictly a management thing, race management, team management strategy. It keeps them below Red Bull and McLaren for me.
Yeah, I get that. I have Ferrari at two. Yeah. You kind of last year, they were so much better with all that stuff, all the race management and strategy than they had been. You kind of thought maybe under Fred Vasseur, this team has changed their tune a little bit and changed their fortunes in that department. After Australia, I'm starting to think that was really Carlos Sainz who did that. Maybe Fred was more open to driver suggestion, but Carlos Sainz, I can always remember him being adamant about what he wanted for strategy on the radio. And I mean, it came out after Australia. He helped Albon. Once he was DNF'd, he got on the pit wall and told Albon, if you don't come into box this lap, you will not be able to keep the car on the track. And so I think Ferrari's going to miss a little bit of that, but you have Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc, two of the fastest drivers on the grid, one of the three fastest cars on the grid, I think. So I think ultimately over the course of the season, they'll be able to work their way back and sort out some of these gremlins and finish second.
For your sake, I hope so. As a Ferrari fan. Yeah.
Not just my sake. There's a lot of us out there.
Yeah. So, all right, number two, for me, I have Red Bull. It's just they have the reigning world champ. And I think that Lawson will score enough points throughout the season in that car. He's a talented driver, and maybe he just figures things out that Checo couldn't. I understand he's a lot younger and less experienced than Checo, but
that could be an advantage.
It could be an advantage. He just thinks less, maybe. I don't know. It's just he
Checo. There's less cars that he's used to. There's less characteristics that
he can't know what you don't know
to drive with. Yeah.
So I just think Max is going to be podium nearly every race unless his car breaks down, and they're just going to score so many points because of that. And Lawson will be in the top 10 most times. That car is just going to qualify, and just based on qualifying alone, he's going to be in the top 10. So we'll see. He has an amazing opportunity, Liam Lawson, to really establish himself and take a hold of this job. He just needs to do better with qualifications, and I think that we'll see him improve week over week throughout the season. And then number one, we both have McLaren.
Yeah, McLaren. I don't think we need to talk about this one too much.
Yeah, they're the best.
An absolute rocket ship. Their driver pairing is the most competitive on the grid. Phenomenal pit crew, always put in lightning fast pit stops, seem to have strategy down. Zach's so actually yeah. Sometimes they don't, but we can talk a little bit about that at later times. But
yeah.
Number one, so, McLaren.
Yep. Number one, McLaren. All right. Top 10 drivers. We'll go right into that. Who do you got at 10?
10. I've got Albon. I think he'll be able to work that Williams nicely. Once he gets in front of you, he's very hard to pass. So,
yeah. He is a very great defensive driver. I have Yuki at 10. he's just, this is his fifth or sixth season now, and they have a good car at Racing Bulls, and a good looking car. And I think that he is just going to be in the top 10 enough times this year, qualify well. It's going to be interesting though, because, so let me ask you this. If say Liam Lawson just shits the bed and he's just not good, and they bring up Yuki to Red Bull.
I don't think they will.
For the thought exercise, say he gets brought up to Red Bull, eight races in. Yuki has had six top 10 finishes and has all these points for Racing Bulls. Obviously, the points don't transfer over for the constructors, but for the drivers, does he keep the points? Does it transfer over?
Yeah.
Yes. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So then, Yuki, I mean, again, you don't think that. I trust your judgment. You have a better pulse of that.
I don't think it'll happen. Helmut Marko hates him for some reason. He does not like Yuki Tsunoda. I cannot understand it.
Maybe it's just a personality.
He's been the benchmark of AlphaTauri for years. He was like basically on par. Okay, I might be getting ahead of myself saying that, but him and Pierre Gasly were not that far off from each other at the end of their time together at AlphaTauri.
So I have Yuki at 10, and I have Liam Lawson at 9. I just think he's gonna fall into a ton of top 10 qualities. He's gonna he's in a really fast car, in a top 4 car on the grid, and he's just gonna get points just based on like falling into it, at a minimum. Even if he struggles, he'll be up there just for that reason. Who do you got at 9?
I got Liam Lawson.
Okay, we're on the same page with that one.
Yeah.
All right,
number 8.
What do you got?
I got Carlos Sainz.
I think he'll get
a little bit more out of that car than Albon does. They're so close, but I think he just has a very good season in that Williams.
Yeah, I'm very big on Williams this year. I think that he has a really big opportunity here. And I think that we can get a bunch of top 5 finishes from Sainz. I think there's a chance. They have a good chance of podiuming once or twice this season. They just have a fast car, like compared to the last couple of years. I'm excited to see how they do. And I think Sainz is just talented enough and he'll get the job done. So if 8th, I have Kimi 7th. I made a mistake about it.
Yeah.
I
wanted to put him higher. I think I thought I should have put him higher, but I didn't think I could realistically, even with what I thought about him. And yeah, now I'm kind of kicking myself. I think he could realistically finish top 5.
Yeah. He's just, what do you have? 30 plus overtakes.
Though. That's such a difficult thing to say, though, because when you look at who's in front of him.
No, he 7 feels both, right.
Both Terrence and Max are going to be in the top 3.
Yeah.
Who's the other two?
Is it a Ferrari
and a Mercedes? It's two Ferraris?
Is George going to finish ahead of him? You have to assume that George is, like, they're going to prioritize George. Say they're 1-2. I guess like a Lando Piastri situation where they're telling Oscar to give up to Lando.
Honestly, wait and see.
Yeah,
you would expect that.
If they're qualified 1-2, it's going to be based on how they qualify a lot. Who's ahead of who in the race?
Which I think leads us to number 6, right? I have George Russell at 6.
Yeah, I have Lewis, and I think that's just based because I just think that
adjustment period.
Yeah, this is all new for him. I'm rooting like hell for Lewis. I think we heard that during the race. Yeah.
Which we'll talk more about, but
I think it's just going to be an adjustment period for him, and he's going to be getting used to it. This is the first car that he's driven outside of Mercedes in almost a decade. So, I think 6 makes sense. More than a decade. Yeah. So Lewis at 6
in 2013,
and you have George at 6. I have George at 5. I think a lot of these guys out. I think
yeah, we just outside, have George and Lewis flipped, and yeah. It's going to be either way. They're going to be very close all season, 2, 3, 4,
yep.
In the constructors. So,
who do you have at 4?
4, I have Charles.
Same.
I think that his qualifying exploits can put him into advantageous positions. It's as simple as that. Yeah. I think that over the course of the year, he'll still be the faster Ferrari driver.
He's just used to the car, and he's just, I mean, it's not just that. He's just really talented, and he's younger. And as great as Lewis is, your reflexes are better when you're younger. They just are. And Lewis is 40 now, right? 39. So
40.
So
I don't necessarily know that he's really lost stuff, but it's hard when you're going into new environments.
Yeah.
To perform the same way. So
absolutely.
It might take a minute. All right. Yeah. Number you have at four.
I have Charles at four, and at three I have Oscar.
That's what I feel like this top I have as well.
This top three, I think we have the same top four. I'm gonna guess we have the same top four here.
Yeah, Oscar three, Max two, Lando one.
Yeah, but yeah, it could go anyway. But
I honestly would not be very surprised if Oscar and Lando end up flipping on our orders. I wouldn't be surprised if Lando wins it, if Oscar wins it. I think that his mentality is so cutthroat that he's willing to do what it takes. I think if...
Which Lando doesn't have. He doesn't have that dog mentality. He's like a happy-go-lucky guy who's a really good racer.
I'm not necessarily willing to say he doesn't have it because I don't know him, but he doesn't outwardly show it. That's for sure.
That's all we have to base on. You know, when you're listening to him.
Right, but that's why I can't say definitely he doesn't have it. Like, we don't know what happens behind the scenes, but what we do know is that he does not outwardly show that cutthroat, I'm going to be champion, you know? Yeah. He always says he thinks he can win a championship, but, like, Max has always said, like, he knows he would be a champion one day. So
it's just a different mentality. It's a
mentality shift.
Yeah, but still, I think he's good enough to win the championship. I think he's in the car that's absolutely good enough.
Talent
I think that he is thought of by McLaren as their number one driver, and it's going to be on Oscar to flip that mentality. If you want to be the number one driver at McLaren, you got to out-qualify him, which I think you mentioned the other day. Out of the 40 races
in like their last 35 races.
Yeah.
In their like last 35 races, Oscar's only out qualified him like four or five times. It's pretty lopsided, but at the same time, McLaren has to be a little bit better in the sense that just because Lando out qualifies him doesn't mean he gets to finish ahead of him in the race too. You know, if Oscar is clearly faster in the race, like he was at certain times in Australia, pulling team orders to me is just ridiculous. It's telling them to hold station in the first round, like when you're 10 seconds ahead of the competition and one driver is clearly faster than the other. Just let him go.
Yeah.
Especially when he's at home.
Yeah, a home race, you gotta let him go.
In some ways McLaren needs to be better, but I'm excited to see them fight this year.
I agree. All right, so that's our top 10. I think that we both underestimated Kimi a little bit. Me way more than you. I think that you were just a little afraid to put
him
higher.
I don't know I underestimated him.
Not underestimate. Wrong word.
I think when you look at it pragmatically with the pace of the cars, I think like that's just where he fell.
You wanted to put him higher, but you didn't. You were feeling a little cautious. Yeah.
My heart wants him higher, but my head is kind of like that's where he has to be.
Yep. So, all right. So we have a constructor's predictions. We have our top 10 driver predictions, top rookies. I'm going to keep this really short. I have Kimi at one. And everybody else after him. I don't really care the order. They're all they all blend together.
I think it's Kimi, Lawson, and those partly car related, but if they were in different car, if they were all in the same car, I think Kimi would still finish first.
Yeah. Well, Liam's
in a Kimi
car, but
Kimi, Lawson, Isaac Hadjar, Gabriel Bortoleto, who I think is going to overachieve some of the rookies, even in that Sauber. then Jack Doohan, and then Ollie Bearman, just because of the car. I think Ollie Bearman's very talented, but that car is going to be very tough to drive this year.
Yeah, poor Haas. Oh, brutal. Thankfully, we have another American team coming in that could, you know, represent us a little better, because Haas has been brutal. All right,
Cadillac.
Let's get into
that. Will be exciting.
So let's talk about our predictions for the Australia race. Just what we said. I'm going to read what I wrote. You read what you wrote. If you want to, do you want to start?
Yeah. So I thought Ferrari was going to win. It had kind of been their playground in these regulations. Charles Leclerc drove away from the field in 2022. I know Max DNF'd, but Charles kind of had pace in hand there anyway. Max won it in 2023, just in line with his dominance. But then last year, it was another Ferrari domination. Both of those cars were so fast all weekend, but ultimately it was Carlos. I thought it was going to be Ferrari and McLaren making up the three on the podium. I thought Oscar was going to get the first podium for an Australian in Australia. And it's just heartbreaking that he didn't.
Yeah, it was very unfortunate. Even that being said, incredible how he finished the race, which we'll get to in a minute, but it was very impressive that he was able to, you know, salvage his day. I had McLaren winning this race. I said they had the best car all for most of last year, and it looked like it'd be more of the same this year without knowing the results from qualifying yet. I think we get McLaren and Ferrari holding down four of the top five spots on the grid with Max in there somewhere, and McLaren winning outright. And I was right for the most part. After qualifying, I was a little off, but Lando held it down.
We're off on Ferrari. I think Ferrari fooled everybody. I think everybody was expecting them to be better than they were. Yeah. Even themselves.
And you said, like, you were after qualifying, you were like, it was interesting. And you were like, maybe their setup was set up for wet weather, and then we get to the race and it just wasn't because we brought up Alex Albon earlier in his defensive driving, and he showed that in force this weekend, holding off Lewis for like 20 plus laps on the inters. Yeah. We were both sitting there like, all right, Lewis, come on. Like, time to pass him.
His race engineer was getting impatient. He was begging him to like use K1, which I guess is like Ferrari's overtake button or their overtake engine mode.
Yeah.
And Lewis just kept saying, leave me to it. I'm learning the car as I go. And yeah. It was a very interesting dynamic there.
Yeah, and we were just waiting, and it just never happened. So the pace just was not there for Ferrari, and they had some issues with strategy. It was raining on and off all throughout the race, and it got really bad near the end. Not to go out of order of what was going on, but the first half of the race was a snooze fest, if we're being honest.
No, let's get into it.
Because
phases of this race. Phase one of the race was basically the start to lap 34.
There were a couple of crashes.
That was no rain was falling, but those are fairly inconsequential in the terms of the timeline of the race, you know?
Right.
People just were out, but it was the track from laps 1 to 24. There was no rain falling. The track was drying each lap, to the point where the inters started turning into slick intermediates, which is when the tread starts wearing down and they start behaving a little bit more like slicks, but they can still handle the wet weather. And you started seeing a dry racing line form. And as that was happening, you had all the teams on radio start asking their drivers, do you think we're getting there? Do you think it's slick tires? And most of them were saying very soon. And then all of a sudden, Fernando Alonso puts his car in the wall on lap 34. And right then, the whole grid came into the pits and put slick tires on. And
it's mostly hard, right?
A bunch of them. It was McLaren, Ferrari, and Mercedes. They were all on hards. Max, Yuki, and Albon were all on mediums. and Nico Hülkenberg came out on mediums in 12th place. At this point, Kimi Antonelli was in 10th place on his hards. They went green again on lap 41. Well, so they spent 7 laps behind this safety car as they were clearing Fernando's car.
Right.
During this time, the weather models said it was going to rain again in about 20 minutes. But because of the safety car, this timeline in terms of laps moved up a lot. So instead of being 15 to 20 laps away, this was now 7 laps away. So once they went racing again on lap 41, started raining like 2 laps later. Lap 44 is when the McLarens went off in that second to last corner. And that's where Oscar got stuck, had to reverse off the track onto the safety car road,
which was incredible.
It was unbelievable. It was, I think everybody watching the race, their heart sunk for him in that moment. I mean, he was having an incredible race. He was pressuring Lando. I think there's a very good chance he wins that race if he doesn't go off. He forced Max Verstappen to make a mistake earlier in that race. I don't think it can be understated how rare that is.
Yeah. He forced Max to go deep
and took a place off him because of it. So he was driving a phenomenal race, and
the tires were spinning in the grass. He wasn't moving.
Lando went off right in front of him. The two of them were a second and a half away apart from each other, and they were the first ones going onto wet track. So they didn't have the benefit of the cars behind them seeing what would happen in front of them. So it was a tough situation for them. The field ended up coming into pit. Half of the grid came in. Half of them stayed out and went around again. Oscar finally got going as Max was coming back around. And Oscar comes out, ducked into the pits, and Max went around again. Max stayed out again.
Yeah. So did the Ferraris.
Ferraris and Yuki and Pierre Gasly followed him. Then that was the last lap Max did on the slicks. He came in on lap 46. The Ferraris inexplicably stayed out. And when they were out, they completely lost it. And a safety car ended up coming out because Liam Lawson binned it on his slick tires, but not before Lando overtook Lewis on the road. Lewis completely lost his pace. Just put them all the way back at the middle of the field and completely wrecked their race. They lost their points.
They were in second and third.
It was a mess.
Like they were in second and third. And the thought was like, all right, they're going to stay out. And they stayed out just too long. And
they stayed out one lap too long. If they pitted just, with Max that one lap earlier,
fifth
it,
and sixth or something like that.
Everything changes.
Yeah. They would have been fine. Which just, again, goes to the point we've been harping on. And it's just Ferrari just keeps on making mistakes. They're shooting themselves in the foot, and it just keeps on happening. Hopefully Lewis can help turn that around. And maybe Sainz is just a genius, you know, when it comes to strategy. Maybe he's running a team one day.
I think it's just conviction. He decides what he wants and tells the team.
Yeah.
And I think that Charles has never done that. I think last year he started doing that a couple times. He did that in like some of the key races he won. Hopefully Lewis can start around doing that. Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, we had that. We had, and I think what was also interesting. So driver of the day was Lando.
Hold on though. We completely glossed over the fact Max Verstappen finished within a second of Lando Norris.
Yeah. He was
that shouldn't have happened.
0.895. He was flying
that
at the end.
That shouldn't have happened.
I mean, it was interesting because you hear the McLaren over the radio. Lando's like, "What's going on?" And there's like, he's like, "Just keep the pace. Your car has the pace. even with DRS, Max was not really closing the gap at all. And so the other day you said, like, I think McLaren's hiding some pace, which go into, because what do you mean by that? Why do you think they're hiding pace?
They just know they don't have to run at full pace. So when you run at like full engine power and full capability, you're burning your parts that much faster. So yeah, like you're going through your gearbox faster, you're going through your engine faster. And why not preserve those? If you know that you're a second faster than the field, run half a second faster than you're capable of. You still have a half a second gap to the rest of the field.
Yeah.
So it's a game that Formula One teams play in order to, one, preserve their equipment, and two, which arguably might be number one, is to fool the competition. Now Ferrari or Red Bull or Mercedes thinks, oh, let's bring a big upgrade package. We could get within a tenth of them, maybe, that we can, that a driver can make that difference.
Right. But really,
all of a sudden, McLaren goes, oh, actually, we have a couple more tenths up our sleeve. And they're not really anywhere near them. So
and they can make their own upgrade
package. It's all gamesmanship. Yeah, it's all gamesmanship.
But
that point that I made about Max, it makes me question how Lando is driver of the day. In this car that's so much faster than everybody else, he only finished a second in front of Max. Max,
I think you can make the argument.
Max was hunting him at the end.
You can make the argument for a couple of different drivers.
That like race was five laps longer. Lando loses.
Kimi has an argument. Nico Hülkenberg, I think, has an argument for driver of the day.
Absolutely.
Getting seventh in that Sauber. I think he was impressive. I think the single most impressive thing that we saw was Piastri getting back in.
There was, what, 10 laps after that?
He moves
There's
up,
what,
like,
16
moves
laps up like after six. The safety car?
How many spots did he move up?
Nico?
Six? Five?
Yeah. Nico went up five spots after that safety car.
Yeah.
And
Piastri
was
really impressive.
Sauber outscored their whole 2024 point total.
Oh,
Nico's
Nico
points are more than Sauber scored last year.
Yeah, so
he scored 4 points.
Maybe Sauber is better than we didn't get to see. You are high.
No, I think that if six cars didn't DNF, then he doesn't get those points. But I mean, good for them. They capitalized, and that's what it's about.
Yep.
100%. When you have the opportunity, you take the points.
Yeah, like you can guess that Sainz finishes ahead of him. Fernando Alonso finishes ahead of him.
Lawson.
Yeah, Lawson.
Hadjar. Hadjar started 11th.
Yeah,
Hadjar was starting 11th when he spun.
He probably gets like 11th or so. But shout out
he's
Nico
close,
Hülkenberg.
But just outside the points.
Shout out Nico great Hülkenberg. Drive. Great drive. Very impressed with what we saw from him. And then Kimi Antonelli also, with all the overtakes that he had.
Yeah.
We were watching his
he
driver.
He picked up
a
couple
lot.
Of the spots from DNFs as well, but he still had 30 plus overtakes on track. It was amazing. There's that great onboard video of him overtaking Albon for P4. Going into turn 9, and it right before he, like, as they were coming out of the chicane that leads into that DRS straight, Pete Bonington, his race engineer, came on the radio and told him, remember, Kimi, take a little bit out of the entry so you get a better exit. And Kimi was just like, screw that, I'm going to pass him before the corner. And so, I mean, it was just like an awesome move. And then as he was coming out of the corner, Bono came back on the radio and goes, yes, mate, what a move. And it was just like he was laughing. He was like, I can't believe this 18-year-old just did that.
He's just watching greatness. And what we were all were. I mean, he was very impressive, and he's why
just
I was
no
questioning.
He has no care for consequences at this age, and it's honestly, it's really fun to watch.
Yeah, he has me questioning my Mercedes prediction. I think that I should have them one or two spots higher potentially because of how impressive he is. But yeah, it was a great race. Good for Mercedes there with the time penalty being taken away from Antonelli, that 5-second penalty. He moved up to fourth place past Albon. And they are tied for the lead in the constructors with McLaren. So we have, we have a great start to the season. I'm really looking forward to next week, and we'll give our predictions to that. And I'm going to ask you what your predictions are at the end. So a couple of topics that we want to touch on.
Yeah, we'll try to go through these pretty quickly too.
So there's a new team that's coming in next year that we want to just, obviously this is our first episode. Yeah. So we just wanted to get our thoughts out in the way. And this
We've
is
known about this for a long time.
You know a lot more about this stuff than I do. So I want to defer to you here. Yeah. Cadillac's
coming
in. This has
been out there for a long time. We've known about Cadillac for several months. But just recently it was officially confirmed by Formula One that they signed the Concord Agreement, which is essentially Formula One's collective bargaining agreement between the teams and the governing body. And it's really exciting. It's going to be an American-run team. This was originally the Andretti entry, but Michael Andretti's aggressive pursuit, I would say, of getting into Formula One rubbed a lot of people in the sport the wrong way. And as a result, they weren't willing to do business with him. So he saw it. Good props on him. He saw the situation. He stepped away for the good of the whole team. And we're getting another works team in Formula One. We're getting a full works team. Cadillac is going to build a Formula One engine, which is very exciting to get a manufacturer like General Motors into the sport. It's huge. And I think that does a lot to spike American interest. It's a real stake. It's not a placeholder team like Haas that's just driving around at the back. It's a legitimate statement of intention that we're investing money, we're investing infrastructure, and we're coming in to compete.
And they've had success at other levels, right?
Yes, they have a big racing program. They're one of the big time players in the IMSA series, which is sports cars. It's a multi-class sports car series. They have a prototype car that runs in the Daytona 24 at the Sebring 12 hours. They're going to run at Le Mans, and they're going to run towards the front. They have been doing it for years.
And they're building their own engines, right? Like this is a quality company that's going to be coming in.
It's a company that knows about racing too. So yeah. I'm interested to see. It'll be exciting with two new teams, with two new manufacturer teams.
Sauber is turning into Audi. Yeah.
Cadillac.
So that'll be good.
It's an exciting time for Formula One. And it'll be exciting to see who the drivers are, because
So that's what I wanted to ask you next. So there's a couple of options. Just give me, we don't want to spend too much time on this, but
yeah,
give me your thoughts on who's your dream pair for this.
Team. So they've said they kind of want an American. It becomes a slippery slope because there's not one that like really sticks out. But I'd say the two that make the most sense are Colton Herta and Kyle Kirkwood. Both of them currently drive for Andretti in IndyCar. They're both towards the front of that grid. Colton Herta finished second in the championship last year, so they both have a lot of talent. I think the one that makes the most sense from IndyCar, though, is Alex Palou, who came up through Formula 3 and Formula 2, got into IndyCar in 2020, and since then has won 3 of the 4 championships in that series. So he is a serious talent. He has real ambitions for Formula 1. So I could see one of those three possibly having one of the seats. And then I think they want somebody with F1 experience. Whether that's somebody on the younger side of the experience, like Yuki, who still has 4, 5, 6 years of experience, or if it's somebody like Checo or Valtteri or Kevin Magnussen, I think these are all options.
All right. Well, we're going to see. I'm excited to have an American team to root for that isn't an embarrassment.
Actually, one more that I'm going to throw in there that I don't think I've ever mentioned to you yet.
Okay.
Let's throw Sebastian Vettel in there.
Yeah? Where's he racing right now?
He's not racing anywhere, but he's done some tests in sports cars. He tested with Porsche to possibly drive in a Le Mans type of car, sports car. And I think you can just tell that he's not done with racing. He still loves it. So
he's got the itch still.
Yeah.
All right. So Cadillac coming next year with the new regulations should be great. We've talked a little bit about Carlos Sainz and how he's, you know, just really, that's another topic I wanted to bring up, and how, you know, how much Williams pursued him and how he could really change the culture.
He's done that everywhere. He's
right. Been. So how, what's the ceiling for Williams this year? Is it fifth? Can they go to fourth and pass one of these top four teams?
I don't think they're getting in with the big boys this year. I think James Vowles has been on the record saying there's a lot of infrastructure work that they need to do at Williams, but they have the financial capability now to do it.
The drivers, which feels good.
Right. And right. What I mean by that is improving their building and their facility and the tools that they have there to build the actual parts that go on the car and
have
to
they
test the parts that go on the car.
Have they gotten the influx of
for
cash
a long time? Because yes, so for a long time, they were family owned. They did not have that kind of money to keep investing and maintaining and upgrading with the advancements of technology. And in, I think it was probably like 5 years ago, a venture capital firm came and invested. And then this past year, they got a new sponsor, Atlassian, and it seems like they're throwing money behind the team. So it's really allowing them to put the work in. But I think Carlos specifically has proven at every stop he's made along the way on the grid, started at Toro Rosso when it was called that, the Red Bull Junior team. He was teammates with Max there. I mean, the two of them obviously overperformed in that car. They made that car faster than what it was. But generally left that team in a better place than when he arrived. Definitely can say the same thing for Renault. He showed up there. They were kind of toiling back at the back of the grid after coming back into Formula One. He shows up, helps push them into the midfield, firmly into the midfield. And then left for McLaren, and he was replaced there by Daniel Ricciardo at Renault, who ended up benefiting from the work Sainz did. He finished top five a bunch of times. At McLaren, he got into the McLaren alongside Lando Norris that drove Fernando Alonso into retirement again. And within 3 years, that McLaren won a race. He wasn't in the car because he moved on to Ferrari, but Daniel Ricciardo once again came in to the seat that Carlos Sainz left and won a race this time. And you can say the same thing at Ferrari. Ferrari was struggling, and he helped revive them alongside Charles Leclerc. And I think it's a testament to the feedback and strong technical work that he's able to do with the engineers, and he knows how to push a team forward. It can't be understated how important that is.
He's like the missing piece like on a football team, like the veteran quarterback, the final piece. And he comes in and he like really fixes whatever issues they're having and puts them into contender status. And it feels
like what you're hoping Juan Soto does for your Mets.
That's exactly right. Hoping that this is the final piece, one of the final pieces for Williams. Cause I think we both like Williams. I think they're just a likable.
It's easy. They're honestly hard to root against. They've done nothing to anybody.
Exactly. And it's been so long since they've won. I'm rooting like hell for them to get back into the winner's circle. I'd love to see a Williams win at some point this season. And maybe they make some upgrades mid-season.
I think next year will be really interesting because of
the new regulations, the
engine that Mercedes is supposedly building. Apparently, like, there's rumbles around the paddock from what I've read that, like, they're doing something reminiscent of what they did in 2014 with the turbo hybrid era and just building absolute warhead of an engine that you can't compete with.
And so Williams gets that engine.
And you know who else is going to get that engine? McLaren.
Wow.
So it can be.
But Honda's coming in for Red Bull. Interesting. Right?
Honda's currently with Red Bull. They're leaving Red Bull after this year and moving over to Aston Martin. Right. Red Bull and Ford partnered up on Red Bull powertrains.
Interesting. Wow. They're
building their own engine.
A lot of change is coming. Yes. So that's exciting.
Cadillac, I think I saw, is taking an engine for the first 2 years. So 26 and 27, they're getting their engine from Ferrari. And then starting in 2028, they're building their own. Yeah.
All right. Our other news and notes that we have, the FIA swearing rule, though it didn't really come to fruition. They were just like, yeah, they can swear. Just, you know, keep it nothing crazy.
I think the blowback probably had a big impact. I think pretty universally people thought it was ridiculous that on top of all the other things that they have to worry about when they're driving a car, they also have to think about their language. I think it's beyond what's necessary. That's all I'm going to say about it.
Yeah. All right. And then the rookie roundtable came out. You said it was great.
These kids are fun.
Yeah, so it was a great rookie class, and we saw it with Antonelli, and unfortunately, more than half of the rookies, you know, DNF'd. Only
him and Ollie finished, but there's a lot to be excited about. I think, at the very least, they're bringing a lot of youth into the paddock. And
yeah, a lot of energy.
If you watch, there's a 15-minute video on the Formula One YouTube channel. It's the Rookie Roundtable. And Laura Winter, God bless her soul, was sitting there trying to host this roundtable. And it was like watching an elementary school teacher try to keep the kids like focused right when they came back from recess. It was unbelievable. So at one point she asked them a question, which rookie are you most looking forward to fighting on the track this year? And Kimi Antonelli looked straight at her, dead serious, and said, Fernando Alonso.
Because
it's like a rook that it's like a joke that Fernando's a rookie. So like, yeah, it went That's like amazing. Completely over her head, but like the five of them were just like hysterically laughing. And she's like, boys, come on. So if
it's good that
if you want some good vibes.
It's good to get the youth movement going. I'm glad that they have that this year, and it should be should be very entertaining.
It's necessary.
Absolutely. All right. Next week, China. That race is at 3 a.m. our time, so we're gonna be watching that the next day on Sunday. This track is interesting. I know.
Can we do quick predictions?
Yeah, give predictions. I know nothing about this track, so I'm going to abstain from giving any predictions. I mean, I think the favorite for every race is going to be McLaren. So I'm not McLaren's going to win. I don't really know much about this track and what it suits.
I think it's going to be McLaren and then Mercedes.
Yeah.
And then Ferrari, Red Bull intermixed.
What about this track?
It looks like Mercedes power looked really good. Like McLaren top line speed was very good in Australia. And this has, I think, the second longest straight on the calendar. It's a 1.2 kilometer straight at this track, which is 0.7 miles. I just think it, I don't know. I just think those, it's a gut feeling. I don't really have a reason. McLaren, I have a reason. It's just because they're faster in general. But I think it's Mercedes, I just have hope for them after Australia.
So I just looked at the weather in Shanghai. Sunny, 75 this weekend. Little cloud cover on Sunday. But for the most part, it's going to be nice there. So no wets this week. They're going to be running on slicks. Does that change anything for you? Or
no.
No.
McLaren right. by a margin, and then Mercedes.
Mercedes. Do you think with the it looks like there's some pretty decent straights here, and something maybe that you mentioned Ferrari. To me is something that you mentioned to me is Williams has really great straight line speed, and they've had that for a while.
Generally,
does that help them? Like, is there anything that they can do early on? Do you think that to jump in that top four? I know I mentioned that earlier, but
no, I don't. I do think there's a gap. I think it's pretty widely recognized. There is a gap between four and five. It's just what it's been
until otherwise proven.
They can close up at the end of the year. If I think James Vowles is too pragmatic, though, he's not going to chase points this year to risk the future.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Yeah. So we got McLaren 1, Mercedes 2. Ferrari and Red Bull somewhere 3-4. So you think Max finishes outside the podium here?
Yes.
He's putting his name on it, folks. Max finishing outside the top three in China. All right. I think that's all we got this week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm all out.
This was great. I'm excited for the rest of the season.
It's going to be a good one, I think. I mean, McLaren might run away from it, but at the very least, we'll get a Hamilton-Rosberg-like battle between Lando and Oscar. So there'll be something to keep us entertained. I can't wait.
Very much so. All right, buddy. This was great. Guys, you can follow us on social. Well, you can follow me. I don't know if you want to give out your socials, but you can follow me on social media. Look up Jesse at Jesse Finver on Twitter. I'm on Threads. I'm on Blue Sky. Just look up my name. I'm on Instagram, TikTok. Just look up Jay Finva, JAYFINVA. And we'll have plenty of content. We'll be on YouTube. Damn. Probably going to be watching this on YouTube. So we'll be starting our channel. And at some point, maybe we do some Twitch stuff. We'll see how this goes. But for now, thanks for tuning in. This was great.
And for me, you can find my Twitter at Howard922. Nothing really to see on my Instagram.
All right, folks. That's it for us. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week. Peace.